for any of those steps that you have experience with. And then, yes? Oh. And then from a quarter to, well, we'll figure it out. And then I'll share about steps 10, 11, and 12, give you a little time to share on that, and close the last 10 minutes. If you have any more questions, I'll put it over there. But the best part, 10, 11, and 12, the joy of living and all that stuff, we'll share about afterwards. So for now, why don't we just take until a quarter after for you guys to share. And if anyone hasn't seen my pictures, they're up here. And also, get out, if you, anybody want, I'm going to give you right now my address and phone number. And I do it because that way when people come up to me after the meeting, I save a lot of time for people that would like it. And I can only tell you that on a daily basis, I receive minimum of one or two OA letters a day, maximum of 10 or 12. And I, to the best of my ability, I eventually answer them. I use it as an excuse to go to the beach because the only place I could write is at the beach. So every day I try to go to the beach and write people. And a lot of people in this room know they've called me and I will get back to you. And just calling to get my messages, people say changes their whole attitude. And sometimes I don't know, like my message right now on my machine is Gladys Knight singing "He's Leaving on a Midnight Train to Georgia." And I go, well, I'm leaving, but it's not for Georgia. You know, and I'll be back Sunday, leave a message, etc. So it changes people's attitude, lightens them up and stuff like that. Even my agents, these rigid people, like I usually leave a rapping message on there. And I'll go, my name is Richie and I'm gone for the day, but it's not too late for you to say, leave your rap and do your thing, and when I come back, I'll give you a ring. So, like, people try to, like, leave a rap and they get all screwed up. But I have like, this one agent who's very, like, business-like. You know, she's, oh, Richard, this is Cricket. I have an appointment for you tomorrow at 10 a.m. at MGM. Call me for the details. And, yo, baby, baby. And then she'll hang up, you know. So it's like, those are the kind of things I come home to, and it's just great to hear how people react to it. To share something off of what Kenny just shared about Jewish people. I was born Jewish and had a lot of resentments about my religious upbringing that I got out in my inventory and stuff like that. And when I do a retreat or a convention, it gives me a lot more time to share in detail about different areas of my recovery. And I was at a retreat recently, I don't know exactly which one it was, that I was sharing about how many people of the Jewish faith in this program have talked about their rebelliousness to the Lord's Prayer, to getting on their knees, you know, which is basically against, you know, their beliefs, et cetera, et cetera. So I just said, you know, very casually, I said, I'm going to start a meeting next week called Jews on Their Knees, you know. And people start asking me where the meeting's going to be, you know, when it is and stuff like that. And my experience is that, you know, God made prayer and people make the rituals. And sometimes when I'm in the shower and I'm going, oh, shit, God, man, what's going on here, is a better form of prayer than when I'm on my knees. But I'm going to share about now steps 10, 11, and 12 in my experience. And when I get here, I realize how important it is once more to work these steps in order. When I first came in the program, like I said, I abstained no matter what, and then I tried to save the world. So I was doing the old two-step waltz, you know. Admit you're powerless, save the world, forget the in-between stuff. Well, it just doesn't work that way. And step 10 says we continue to take personal inventory, and when we're wrong, promptly admit it. Well, if I hadn't done steps 1 through 9, of course, I couldn't have originally done an inventory, so I can't continue to take it if I didn't do it in the first place. But the key to me was, and when we were wrong, promptly admit it. Now, if I didn't do all those steps in between, I wouldn't have ever been wrong, You know, so how could I admit it if I never thought I was wrong? I couldn't have had the humility to admit I was wrong. I didn't have the courage to admit it. So all those steps gain an importance in leading to one another. So very briefly on step 10, when I first got there, they had a formal step 10 workshop in L.A. every Sunday afternoon. Used to go there. We used to make a debit and credit list. We used to have a real formal step 10. And it worked for me for a while. And then I used to do mental step 10s, and I had many instances where I would catch myself, you know, like it says in the book, in times of anger, and to ask myself, what's going on here? And it was always my own character defects and that ability to recognize it instantly that would overcome my frustrations and anger. And for the past whatever years it's been, my step 10 has been real simple. At the end of the day, in the chapter into action in the book, it says we review our day with God. We ask Him, where have I been selfish, dishonest, afraid? Have I kept something to myself that I should share with another human being? And that's basically what I do as a step 10 every night. And I can honestly say that the selfish and afraid stuff is gone. That's history. The dishonesty, you know, it's like I'm really honest with myself and with God. But sometimes I choose to not trust completely that being honest with another person, whether I hurt their feelings or not, is the right thing to do. So I found out that blunt honesty could be cruel. You know, like if somebody says, listen, we're all going dancing, do you want to go? And I don't want to go because they're boring. To say, well, I don't want to go, you guys are boring, you know. So I'd rather say, gee, I'm sorry, I have another appointment. You know what I mean? So that's the kind of things. And then when I look at that and I think of my other prayers, you know, God says, well, you know, you're not perfect yet, so you got to keep coming back, you know. And I really review my day with God, and then at the end I get into the gratitude. I am so grateful for my life. I just have to tell you, I don't believe there's another human being that has a better life than me today. I have friends of mine who aren't in the program who have shared with me over the years how everybody looks to have their niche in life, you know, to feel useful. And they said, I have found my forum to feel useful. One of my meditations once that I read says that, isn't it terrific that here we are, a group of people who have overcome our biggest problem in life. And then what we get to do is share how we've overcome it with other people with the same problem. And what a wonderful world it would be if everybody who overcame their biggest problem spent the rest of their life sharing how they did that with people with a similar problem. It would be a pretty terrific world. But I get to do that. I get to feel profoundly useful by being an instrument for God. And no amount of money, power, prestige, romance, or anything in the world can make me feel the way I do now. I not only get to be useful, but I get to be constantly surrounded by loving people. This little teddy bear I'm wearing, you know, is a gift from someone. These beads that I'm wearing is a gift from an OA friend who brought them back from Hawaii when she went to the regional convention there. And getting into my meditation and prayer. Again, you know, to improve our conscious contact with God as we understand Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out is step 11. How could you improve it if you didn't make it? The first 9 steps is what got me my conscious contact with God. The first 9 steps is what vividly made me realize the promises of the program were true in my life. I suddenly realized that God was doing for me what I couldn't do for myself. And when I realized that, I couldn't get enough of it. So step 11 was real easy for me. But what started me on the path of step 11 was I was in the program. The gifts of life are incredible. I was in the program about a month or two. And this gal, Sandy, just took a liking to me and gave me two meditation books, two Hazelton books, day by day and 24 hours a day. And she said, read these on a daily basis. They've really been helpful to me. And I went home, and the day-by-day book is written by a group of young recovering addicts from Denver, Colorado. And it kind of speaks in everyday language that I could really relate to. The 24-hour-a-day book is full of thee, thou, thy, thouest, Jesus, God, you know, and this stuff. And that really turned me off because I wasn't ready for that stuff. So I called her up. I said, I really appreciate this, but that thou, thee, thou, you know. She goes, well, just try to read it in your own language and trust me. So that ended up alternating being my favorite books. About 6 months later, I had some Al-Anon problems that I used to share at OA meetings. My Al-Anon experiences, I had never felt comfortable at Al-Anon meetings. So I go every 6 months to prove I'm honest, open-minded, and willing. And I give a dollar, and I share how I don't get anything out of the meetings. So this gal heard me share that, and she bought me a book called One Day at a Time in Al-Anon. And nothing has helped me more in my relationships with my daughters and other people in my life than those daily meditations that I've been reading for over 8 years now. Then the gal that I told you I shared that first inventory with that said, you know, keep coming back, she sent me a subscription to the Daily Word, okay? Now, this one talks a lot about Jesus and stuff like that, and I was far from ready for that shit, you know. So I called her up and I said, look, I said, I really appreciate your generosity, but I'm not into this Jesus shit. She says, Richie, just substitute higher power and look at the message, okay? So that was like 8.5 years ago, and the subscription was for a year. Well, I still got the book on a daily basis, and I've probably bought it for about 50 people. You know, in fact, I just got a thing for a special, 4 subscriptions for $1 a year or something each, and I sent them to 4 more people. And they get to call me up and go, Richie, I really appreciate what you did, but I'm not into this Jesus shit, you know. And I get to say, well, just substitute the word higher power and read the message, you know. And it goes on and on and on. So I've been reading those 4 books every morning for over 8 years now, never missing a beat. And at one point, I was calling someone in the afternoons because we both felt we needed a double dose of meditation books midday. And about a year or two into it, I started sharing with someone how I loved the St. Francis prayer, which was the first prayer I hooked into in the program. And they go, oh, yeah, I read it every day. It's in the front of my 24-hour-a-day book. I go, what 24-hour? They go, the little black one. I go, no, I mean day by day. I go, no. She says, yeah. I said, come on, I read that book every day for years. She says, open it up, and there's the St. Francis prayer. And then someone shared about me and said, and you read 24 hours a day. Don't you just love the Sanskrit proverb? And I go, to what? You know, look to this day for it is life. I go, what about it? That's in the front of 24 hours. I said, get out of here. I read that book every day. So now I got these 2 extra prayers that I get to read every day. I read the daily meditation, and then I read that. So that's all I did for a long time. I read these meditation books, but the prayer stuff was not for me. So as God would have it, I was in an OA play, and this is for the person who wrote about the one-year jitters. And it was called Saturday Night Live. And it was a bunch of vignettes based on a Saturday Night Live TV program. And I had just been in the program about 6 months, and I was struggling with the prayer and meditation stuff. So my part in the show, we did this little vignette about based on Dickens' Christmas Carol. And instead of Scrooge being the main character, it was a guy coming up on his first year of abstinence who had the jitters and was afraid that he wasn't going to make it through the night. So he was all jittery, he fell asleep, and he started dreaming, and here comes the ghost of Binge's past. Okay? And it was this guy who was his binge buddy trying to convince him, forget about that OA birthday shit. Let's have a good one. Let's tie. And he brought potato chips and pizza, you know, and all that. And the guy says, I don't know. I'm not sure. Maybe I should. Maybe I shouldn't, you know. And then I came, and I was the ghost of of abstinent present. And it was in the form of a cab driver who was coming to, he needed a cab, but I was also the man who mastered fear. Now, what I had to do, my dialogue in the show was from a chapter called The Man Who Mastered Fear. And I'll paraphrase it. And I said to him, I want to see if you were alert. I said to him, I said, well, you don't have to eat. He said, well, I tried everything else. I called my sponsor. I went to a meeting, and I still got the jitters. He said, what should I do? And then I said, which is from The Man Who Mastered Fear, this was my lines in the show. I said, well, he said, what did you do when you came up from a year? And I said, well, I tried prayer. I said, try it. Even if you're against it, even if you don't really want to do it, try it anyway. Nothing else works, so you may as well try this. So I got, this is what I said in the show. So I got down on my knees for the first time in 30 years, and I said, God, please relieve this obsession for me. I can't do it alone. And when I did that, I got a feeling of quiet strength suffused and intermingled with a feeling of peace. And as I'm reciting this, he gets on his knees on stage and he falls asleep. And I said, and I woke up the next morning and then the lights went out and drowned out. I said, and I was a new person. And what happens in the play is he wakes up, he's got his year, and we all sing happy birthday, and that part of the show was over. So by reciting that, it puts that little seed in here saying, why don't I try that shit? You know what I mean? It sounds like really good. I've tried everything else, and I gotten to the point in my program where I was starting to feel I needed something else. So I went home and I got on my knees. And I felt exactly the description in the book. That quiet strength with that feeling of peace. So being, you know, a rebellious person I am, it felt so good I did it about 3 months later again. You know? And I had an incident where I went to a meeting and shared about my discomfort, and two guys at the meeting said, well, did you try prayer? I went, oh yeah, it was great. I did it about 3 months ago, you know. They go, well, why don't you try it like for 30 days? I go, like every day? They go, yeah, try it, you know. So, then I went to a meeting and a beloved Natalie, who I've co-led many retreats with over the years, shared about, she's a school teacher, when she gets crazy in class, she excuses herself, goes to the ladies' room, goes in the cubicle, get on her knees and prays. And she prays for two things. One is that nobody catches her on her knees. And the other is for God's will. And I went, hey, that's me. That's why I don't want to get on my knees. I'm afraid someone's going to see me or say something, and then I remembered in the book where it says we don't need to be ashamed of God. People that believe in God aren't weak, and we can prove that with what God does with our lives. So I made a commitment to do it for 30 days, and that was about 7.5 years ago, and I haven't missed a day, no matter what. You know, there are many days that I'll get on my knees and I'll go, God, I offer myself today. What does that mean? It means that I really want to offer myself. And I'll go on and on for like 15, 20 minutes. And then there are days when I'll go, God, offer myself, well, amen, I got to go now. And that's cool, you know, but it's what I shared with Kenny. It has nothing to do with being on my knees, making me feel humble before God or anything. It's a commitment that I have to start every day with a conscious contact with God. I start every morning, including this morning, by reading those four meditation books. Plus this year, some OA person from Connecticut sent me this book, what the hell is the name of it? Beautiful, big, you know, fancy book. Oh, God, I can't think of the name of it. And again, it's one of these books with all this, you know, religious stuff. What the hell is it? She says, read The Message. It's one of my favorites already. It's a wonderful book. I wish I could think of the name of it. Call me up, send me a letter, I'll tell you the name of it. But it's not important. What's important is they're all gifts from other people that God works through. So I've changed over the years in my prayer and meditation. I was one of those people that wanted a definition between prayer and meditation and looked through all these spiritual books to find it. And one day, one of these people who's going through the pains of growing up got up at the maintainers meeting And I went, oh, shit, man. I said, are we going to have to listen to this? First of all, the rules are that if you shared last week, you shouldn't share this week so someone else can share. And I know she shared 3 weeks in a row. You know what I mean? So my critical judgmental part came up and said, why don't you obey the rules and this and that? She got up and said, oh, I had this wonderful experience. I was talking to a friend of mine, and I said, what's the difference between prayer and meditation? And he said, prayer is talking to God, and meditation is listening. And that was all I needed. Character. I know what they are. I know what I have to do instead. And what I've done over the years is people have suggested if you get bored and you want a little change, start out 1 month with the first letter of the alphabet. And meditate on every word that you could think of that starts with that letter that describes your relationship with God. And it's great, you know, you get into, you know, like, there's easy letters like B, beautiful, you know, bounty, you know, you get it on and on. Then you get to letters like X, and you have to get creative, you know. So I go, ecstatic, exciting, and God says, whoa, Richie, that's not, I said, hey, give me a break, it's a tough letter, you know what I mean? And it's like, and I go on and on, and I found that was really, you know, a great way to meditate. It's like a great new way. And people have suggested, you know, a lot of different things like that that I've tried. One of the gifts that I've gotten is a little pamphlet written by Emmett Fox, his interpretation of the Lord's Prayer. And this is for all you people that when we say the Lord's Prayer, say, give us this day our daily abstinence or our daily strength, because you can't say bread. You know what I mean? We're compulsive overeaters. How could you ask for your daily bread? So in that pamphlet, it breaks down the Lord's Prayer and his interpretation, and it has like a whole chapter on Our Father and how that means if it's Our Father, that means everyone in this room is my brothers and sisters in my Father's house, and I have to treat you accordingly. And it talks about the relationship about a father to a child and how you can have that relationship with God as a father does to a child. So then when it gets to give us this day our daily bread, it talks about bread being the spiritual nourishment that we can receive from God every day. So when I go to a meeting and hear someone say, give us this day our daily strength, I just give them the pamphlet next week. I go, this is a great pamphlet. It's been really helpful to me. Read it. And I don't tell them about the bread part or anything like that. I just pass on what people have passed on to me. And any spiritual bookstore, you can find it. It costs about 50 cents. And I did that for months, meditated just on the Lord's Prayer and what every word in there means. And if you do that with every prayer that we have in our books, boy, it's powerful shit. You know what I mean? So the other thing I'd like to share, and, you know, time, you know, I wish I had more time because I have so many pearls of wisdom to share here. But I need to share this part because whenever I share, you know, someone told me that the two things that offend compulsive overeaters most is foul language and a lot of references to God. Well, you've already learned I do a lot of both, you know, so I can offend everyone. But I just did a retreat in Fresno a couple of weeks ago, and I shared my experience with my relationship with God. Oh, no, this was in Cincinnati. And, you know, they have love notes at retreats and stuff, if you're familiar, where people write love notes, like, thanks for sharing, I love you, blah, blah, blah. So sometimes the love notes are not too loving. And this person wrote that she was really shocked that the whole weekend that I shared with hardly any foul language until I shared about my relationship with God, and I kept cursing, and she got very so offended that she didn't come back for my last speech. So I start questioning myself. Well, maybe I do get carried away. And then God says, Richie, you just got to be Richie. Okay? Well, just yesterday I got a letter from a guy in Cincinnati who was at that convention. And he said, because of what I shared and how I shared it about my relationship with God has opened up a whole new life for him and a whole new meaning of God. And he wanted to thank me for being so honest and so blunt. So once again, it gets proven to me what I already know is that I just have to share my experience. So what I'm going to share is I was doing a marathon in Billings, Montana, and I had an Ask It basket. And one of the questions was that if you had a picture frame, beautiful oak picture frame, and you had to put a picture of your vision of what God looked like, who would it be? And I said, Magic Johnson. And then, you know, now you get a response here like, huh? But in Billings, Montana, they don't even know basketball, this game. And they go, huh? And they go, what do you mean? The Magic Johnson guy? I go, no, no, no. I said, it's like when I get on my knees and I talk to God, I can't visualize this guy in a flowing white robe with a beard and a scythe, you know, going, yes, my little son. And I go, oh, thou master of thy universes, please helpest me to doest your willest. It doesn't work for me. But I can get up and I go, hey, I'm fucked up, man. Where do we go from here? And he says to me, be cool. He said, here's what's happening, see. He says, I lead the league in assists. So you're never alone. So when you're going down that court of life, you see, he says, and you take a shot and you miss it, you go for the rebound, you get it, you shoot again. If you miss, you shoot again. And after three misses, you go, whoa, maybe we need to get back on defense here and look at the situation in a different light. He says, you got it? I go, that's cool. I can relate to that. He goes, you got it now, right? He goes, okay, now you're going out and do my will, right? You know that I know that you want to do my will. Is that cool? I go, that's cool. I go, and you know that I know that the way you run my life is much better than the way I run it, right? He goes, right. I get up, I give him a high five, and we go out and we bop around the world, see? And nobody knows that I'm shucking and jiving, you see, but when somebody, you know, like steps on my toes, as we say, and my first, you know, reaction is to be angry and retaliate, Maddie says, I got it, man. That's a personal foul. He says, two shots. Get to the foul line. I go, I got it, Magic, you know. And it like cools me down, and it works for me. It works for me to the nth degree. Because I know that, you see, and the reason that I picked Magic is, and this is afterwards that I realized it, he's got the zest for living that I have. He's got that joy in his eyes. He's got that ability to touch other people's lives in a spiritual way. He has that gift of giving of himself no matter what. He works with other people. He gives, 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 and gives. And immediately, about 6 months after that happened, there was an interview with Pat Riley, the coach of the Lakers. And they said to him, do you think that Magic is the catalyst for the Lakers, or the Lakers style is the catalyst for Magic Johnson? And he says, you know, there are a few stars in this league that when they come out on the court, a beam of light shines around them even when there's not a beam of light. He says, the thing that makes Magic even more special is that light comes from within. And I read, I said, wow. This blows me away, you know. And since then, I invite everyone when you're in L.A. to come to my apartment to see all the Magic-oriented stuff that people have sent me over the years. I did a retreat in Portland, Oregon, and there was a gal who's an artist for a living. And she drew this beautiful painting of animals in the woods like Bambi and Thumper and everything. And on it, it says, many people see the beauty of the forest, but only a few of us see the magic, you know? And those are the kind of gifts I've gotten over the years. So the thing that convinced me that I could share this, because this is how it works for me, is when I got a letter from somebody from a retreat that I shared, who said to me, she said, you know, what you shared about your vision of God being Magic Johnson, she says, I went to a spot overlooking the ocean, and this is a beautiful spot where I did a retreat called Twin Rocks, Oregon, where the woods meet the ocean, and there's like this beautiful rock coming out of the ocean. She said, and I thought about what you said, and I envisioned what God was to me, and I saw Jesus Christ. She said, so I went back to my church of my choice and took Jesus back into my life and into my heart. And only because of what you shared about Magic enabled me to do that. So then I went back and I wrote a dialogue with Magic. And what he said to me, he said, Richie, if we can share Magic and people find Jesus, who the fuck are we to question if we're right or wrong? You know what I mean? So I don't even question it anymore. And the things that have happened over the years is someone who I sponsored, who I've shared that with, she decided like George Burns was cool for her. You know, like he played God so many times, like that's someone she could talk to, who could sit down and listen to her and like be cool, you know. So she said, do you think that's weird? I said, how can I think it's weird? A few years later, I went to do a retreat in Lake Erie, Ohio, and I shared what I'm sharing now. And then we had the time for the group to share their experience. And this girl got up and shared how her higher power is George Burns. So I saved the tape, got back to L.A. and sent it to Chris, and I said, I want you to listen to this. And it blew her away. And since then, I've heard three people talk about George Burns. You know what I mean? Whatever works for you, works for you. But what works for me is that sincere desire to do God's will. And when I get down on my knees and I talk to God, like magic understands me better than Bishop Sheen. It just works that way for me. We talk a similar language. It doesn't mean I'm irreverent. It doesn't mean that I think magic is God or anything like that. It means that it gives me a real ability to commute wherever I go with God on a real loving basis, you know. And just to tie it all in, I went, see, the joy of living, which the step 12 says, the joy of living is the theme of step 12, and action is the magic word. The joy of living for me is that I carry this in all areas of my life. Last Saturday night, I went to Universal Amphitheater to see Gladys Knight and the Pips in concert. And that was the day that the Lakers won the seventh game from Utah, which was a real grueling game. And guess who was sitting five rows in front of me? Magic Johnson. So they introduced him from the audience, and Gladys said, the man played his heart out today, and he came here, dragged himself here to see this concert. You know we got to work hard, you know. And he gave him a standing ovation. And after the show, I went backstage, because we're like family, and Magic was back there. And we got to talk for a few minutes. Nothing big, no big deal or anything. But again, he exemplified to me, I mean, with all the pressures and everything the man had, he's the most gracious person you could ever want to see. I saw him at Venice Beach one day, and the man can walk in Venice Beach, as famous as he is, as adored as he is by people, and for some reason people don't hassle him, they just love him. Because he's that kind of person that's, you know, an example of God's handiwork. He just walks through being a loving human being. And that's what I want my God to be. People have told me over the years that they put out want ads for God. You're not sure what you want in God? Make a want ad. I want a loving, compassionate, understanding God who speaks three languages like me, who can understand my insanity when I'm eating and my sanity when I'm not, etc., etc., and you'll get it. And you'll get exactly what you want and what you need. And because of that, I can't get enough of that. All I could tell you is that my whole lot in life is for 24 hours a day, every minute of the day, to have God talking through my head instead of that committee that many people talk about. And I have it because I'm practicing the principles. And every time I practice honesty, I'm talking to God. Every time I practice faith, there's no doubt that I'm talking to God. And that is what's gotten me where I am today. I haven't had a bad day ever since I'm in this program. I really don't remember. Now, this week my car got smashed up. I had this fucked up thing with my daughter and her new boyfriend and stuff. I had a big disappointment at work. A girl who I, that one girl that I slept with that told me we could screw our brains out and have fun has become a fatal attraction in my life. I get poison messages and letters from her. And I have in my purse, I have a letter that I wrote to her about 6 months ago when I led a retreat and shared it with Natalie and shared it with her. And she said, it really hurts, but it was the most loving, honest thing that any man has ever done, and I thank you very much for it. 4 months later, she was like fatal attraction in me. You know what I mean? And you know something? None of it matters. The only thing that matters is that I'm here today sharing God, you know, and I'm surrounded by loving people. I get to go back, lay by the pool, and decide, do I want to go to dinner or not? Do I want to go with you? Do I want to go with you? Do I want to go alone? Do I want to go to Carl's, or do I want to go to Tony Roma's? Who cares? Just for now, I got everything I need. And I'm sorry we didn't have time. I don't know if there's any more questions. If there are, they weren't supposed to be answered. If anyone was supposed to share, they've already shared. And I just want to try to end on time. And I'm going to end and sum it up by reading something from step 12 on page 124. And this is for each and every person in this room to know that this describes you. It says, still more wonderful is the feeling that we do not have to be specially distinguished among our fellows in order to be useful and profoundly happy. Not many of us can be leaders of prominence, nor do we wish to be. Service gladly rendered, obligations squarely met, troubles well accepted or solved with God's help. The knowledge that at home or in the world outside, we are partners in a common effort. The well understood fact that in God's sight, all human beings are important. The proof that love freely given surely brings a full return. And the certainty that we are no longer isolated and alone in self-constructed prisons. The surety that we need no longer be square pegs and round holes, but can fit and belong in God's scheme of things. These are the permanent and legitimate satisfactions of right living, for which no amount of pomp and circumstance, no heap of material possessions could possibly be substitutes. True ambition is not what we thought it was. True ambition is the deep desire to live usefully and walk humbly under the grace of God. And I really thank you for letting me do that today. Thank you very much.